Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple of hours, we're here talking about cars and motorhomes and vehicle emissions and what kind of oil and gas and stuff like that that you want to talk about. If you have a car question or if you have a car argument in your family or if you were told something by your husband and then the dealer said something different or the independent repair shop said something different, that's kind of where we come in. So we'll give you good information, we'll have a nice discussion, and all you have to do is call in. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by, I have a list of the best car repair shops in the valley. You can find that at marksalem.com, but Larry Harker's is on that. They've been around Phoenix since 1967. They do a really good job, fast, affordable services, from auto electrical work to brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, oil changes, tire rotations, and all the way up to the most sophisticated stuff, they can handle it. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School and you don't already have a shop, or you want to compare your shop to somebody else's, then call Larry Harker's Auto and ask for an oil change or something like that and see how you're treated. That's the easiest way to get around that. There's all kinds of paperwork here, and you have to forgive me because I'm kind of frazzled. My studio went down, and we've had all kinds of experts in here looking at my studio, and the problem with the whole issue is that everybody turned all the knobs, so I have to reset the whole thing. And so that's the kind of difficult thing I've been doing all morning long, is just kind of resetting the inputs and the outputs and all that kind of stuff. But in the absence of Gil yelling in my ear, I think we're pretty good. So nevertheless, 602-508-0960. When it comes to cars and maintenance, one of the things that I object to right now in our industry is the idea that we should over-maintain your car so your car will love you and never fail. And, of course, that's just a silly idea. The manual is your manual. It's written by the people that made your car, designed your car, and you should go by the manual. There should be a reason for deviation, but maybe not. If there are a lot of senior citizens that drive to church and back, grocery store and back, and it takes them forever to get to 3,000 miles, if that's their oil change interval, or even worse, if it's 10 to 15,000 mile oil change interval, it takes them a while to get there. But the manual is the manual, and it's written for you. And so you identify from the manual. And what's going on in our industry is that right now with newer cars, we've lost a third to a half of our maintenance business. A third to a half. Because today on the newer cars, we used to do everything at 30,000, 60,000, and 90,000 mile intervals. Today, most all of that's moved to 100. So we've lost a lot of the cooling system flushes. We've lost a lot of the transmission services and the fluid changes, which is a big deal. So you have to be careful because you don't want somebody taking out a very expensive synthetic transmission fluid at 30,000 miles when your car can go 100 on that fluid with no problems. Now, on the flip side of the same coin, there is a, you know what, here is brand new fluid, Mr. Salem, and come over here and smell the new fluid and then smell what the dipstick smells like. Ooh, that's burnt. Yeah. Well, I did pull a boat up to Lake Powell not too long ago with my truck, and I probably went faster than I should. Okay, well, I would suggest that you just change the transmission fluid at your earliest convenience. Let's get some new fluid in there because the stuff that's in there has been road hard and put away wet, so to speak. So that's kind of how it works. That kind of interaction is great. Something else that came up this week is a guy writes me a note and says that he went to a repair shop or a tire shop here in town, and it's a chain store. And there's a lot of them, so I'm not going to identify who they are. And he said that he was told that he had a screw in his tire and that they couldn't, and it was against the law, to patch or repair a tire that was 5 years old. And that he would simply have to buy a new one. Well, he thought that that was something unusual, so he left and went to the hero here, his Discount Tire. He went there and they said, no, we don't do that. We don't know anything about that. We've never heard about that. But it is a store I'm familiar with, a chain that I'm familiar with. And it seems to me that many, whether it's a sole proprietorship or whether it's a chain store or it's a franchise or whatever, it seems to me that most everybody's moving that target around a lot to suit them. But again, the manual in your glove box is the Bible for your car. So it's not true that we cannot patch a tire. It's not true. There is no time limit on the patch of the tire. The tire should expire and be taken off the road at 10 years because historically we know a tire that's north of 10 years old has a bad habit of exploding and causing serious injury and death and a lot of property damage to the people in and outside the car. So we know that. There's many of us that won't even touch a tire that's 10 years or older. So if you bring your RV in and you want the tires rotated and we look and the tires are 13 years old, there's many of us that say with polite, as polite as we can, we're not going to touch your tires. They are expired. You're putting your family at risk. I don't care if you buy tires from me or not, but here's the document. Go into the lobby, log on to the on our Wi-Fi, and look at DOT number on a tire. And you'll see that historically, your odds of having a serious tire problem are just huge after 10 years. There's also shops out there, and I know many of them that have done this, where we've got an elderly couple that are in Social Security and are on a budget, and they end up with two tires that are 10 years or older. But they have to budget for the tires, and they're going to go visit the grandkids in Texas. This is a true story because the shop owner told me this. He said, we just put two new tires on it. It's a customer that's been our customer for a long time, but we're not going to send him to Texas with a 12-year-old, 13-year-old tire. So we just put two new tires on it, and we just pretended it, you know, drive safe. That's all. That was the only warning they gave, is just drive safe. There's lots of shops out there that do that kind of stuff. There's lots of shops out there that help their customers, but it's not the first-time customer, so you can't go in and tell us a sob story and want us to extend credit to you, that kind of stuff, for obvious reasons. It's that simple. But there's lots and lots of salesmanship going on, and here's the number one thing I would like you to think about. When you're faced with someone that's standing in front of you from a repair facility, a maintenance facility, a dealership, a franchise, an independent repair shop, whatever, and they start telling you stuff about your car, you should say to them, please just write it down and then sign your name and write your extension on it so I can get back with you. Because if they're telling you the truth, there's no problem with writing it down. But if they're not telling you the truth, there's a big problem with writing it down. And that's the issue. It's an easy way to separate the big boys from the liars and the cheats. There's also a thing going on right now with respect to reviews and of all the different places on the internet that you can file a review against a shop, whether you love the shop or you hate the shop. And all of us have good ones and bad ones, and so do I. Here's what happened recently that was kind of unusual. Gentleman takes his car into the shop, and during this process, they tell him that he says, I have an appointment at 11, and they said, well, it could be up to 2 hours. And he says, well, then why do I have an appointment at 11 if there's a 2 hour wait? He says, I hadn't planned for that. I had planned for you to change my oil, you know, when I got there and send me on my way so that I could get to work. So there was this discussion that went on with respect to what's good an appointment, and he's slightly aggravated. He admits to his voice raised just a little bit, but he didn't say any bad words and so forth and so on. And so then a little later on, they called him back and said, you know, you want to redo the appointment. And he goes, well, what good does it do for me to make an appointment at 11 o'clock in the morning when you tell me that I'm going to have to wait, you know, whatever, whatever. So he writes what he describes, and I agree, a nice review about, they told me it would be 2 hours, but then it would take another, they told him 2 hours initially, then it would take another hour to do the work. An oil change for an hour? I don't know how that works, but anyway, so he writes a review up, and the shop calls him back and says, we're really sorry, we'd like you to revisit your review and perhaps even reconsider what you said. And he said, so I took my review down. So I call him up. I say to him, what did they do? What did they say? What did they? He goes, well, he says, I sold out. And I said, you sold out? And he goes, yeah. I said, what does that mean, you sold out? He says, well, I can be bought for a $300 complete automotive detail. And I said, oh, so what'd they say? He said, they said that when I make an appointment at 11, I'm going to be there at 11, and they're going to take my care of my car. And if I would take the review down, then they would just give me, next time I came in, they would do a full detail inside and out, engine compartment and everything in my car. So that throws a whole new picture into what's going on in the world as far as reviews are concerned. And you need to know that if somebody has nothing but glowing reviews, that's somewhat suspicious in today's environment, especially with car repair. Even my own, I think our average is 4.2, 4.3. There's a bad review in there about two Corvettes and blah, 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 and the car didn't run right, and they did this, and they said this, and all that kind of stuff. All of us have that kind of thing in the car repair industry. But it's just interesting that somebody has set a new bar where we call you up and do something to make you take your review, which then calls into question all of the repair shops, whether it's a dealer, a chain store, an independent repair shop, a mom and pop store, whatever. Our 5-star rating takes a little less meaning as far as Mark Salem's concerned. Because if you're buying the bad ones and you have nothing but 5-star ratings, okay, you've made all those people happy, but I'm not quite sure we're supposed to sell our story or our integrity as a customer, I should say. That the customer should use that, because many of them will begin to use that, and then the shop has a tough time deciding whether or not they need to buy this customer or just get rid of them altogether. So those are the kinds of questions. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me turn down my headphones just a little bit, and I'm still adjusting my board, so you have to forgive me. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, and we're going to, just real quick, we'll take two calls, but Automatic Transmission Exchange and Phil has been around since 1968. Phil's a good guy. He knows transmissions because he got in on the ground floor of the first 2-speed power glides and all the automatics that we don't see anymore because they were huge pieces of horse manure. And the idea is that the new electronics are altogether different. However, they both shift the same. We just use different ways to shift them. So instead of a cable or a vacuum line, we use electronics. So if you need a transmission repair, or you got a leak here, or you need somebody just to drive it, take into consideration no Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for the test drives, because that's a real busy time for us, then stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And Bob, you're up first.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Do you know a shop, a tire shop in North Scottsdale that would mount and balance 4 used tires if you brought in your own tires?
Well, are the tires expired or are they okay?
No, they're not out of date. They're just like used tires that I bought from someone.
Okay. I don't know. I would imagine that you would call, Walmart Auto Center. I would imagine you'd call some.
They don't want to do it. The big places like that don't want to do it.
Then are they? Did you stop by and say these are the tires, and I want to? And they looked at the tires and they said no.
Yeah, they just flat don't do it because they want to sell you tires, and they don't want to waste their technician's time.
Well, I don't agree with your reasoning because
money
Bob, think about it. Think about it. We collect the same amount if we mount your tires or for labor. We get the same amount of money whether we're mounting and balancing new tires or mounting and balancing Bob's used tires. It's not a matter of selling tires. It's a matter of liability. So we touch the tire last. We mount and balance it 3 days later, 3 weeks later, 3 months later. The left front tire blows out. Your wife is driving. She loses control of the car. She dies. We're going to be in the food chain. Now, if I'm going to be in the food chain, I want to own the tires. I don't want to do used ones. I'm thinking that's what they're saying. But to answer your question, no, I don't really know anybody that wants the responsibility for what effectively might be $10, $15 a tire times four and have the possibility of being, you know, involved in a lawsuit because we mounted and last touched a set of tires that were used and we don't know where they came from or what kind of environment they were used in. And so you'll just have to keep calling around. I would imagine down on Washington and Jefferson, there's probably some tire stores down there that would be happy to install your used tires because they sell used tires. But most of us have already been sued for stuff like that, and we just figured it's the path of least resistance because Bob and his used tires only come around, you know, once or twice a year, and that's all we really have to deal with it. Good luck to you, Bob. Jeff, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I recently had some work done at a local shop and got home looking over my invoice, and I looked up the part number and discovered I could buy the exact part at half the price the shop charged me. I wonder, is that typical for shops to mark up parts like that?
Well, the answer is yes. There is a window, and you've hit the middle of the window. So there's guys that are going to buy or sell it less, and there's guys going to be sell it for the list price, and then there's guys that are going to be going over the list price. Yes, the answer is yes.
So in the future, am I better to figure out what's wrong with my car, buy the part, walk into a shop, say, can you install this for labor cost only?
No, because none of us are going to – well, no, because I'm not going to do that. First of all, You diagnosed it, and so you bought the part – and then I get it in the shop, and then I find out that the part doesn't fit your car because it's an R-VIN, and you put in a V-VIN. And then the car is now sitting in the bay or pushed out into the parking lot until you get the right part. And then you bring the part in, and we install it. And then all of a sudden when the part fails, we're in the food chain about, well, you touched it last, or... Mark, take the part off. I'm going to send it in for warranty. But I'm going to charge you again, Jeff. It's not a really good idea to do that, but let me explain something to you. There's a place on the internet called Rock Auto. And Rock Auto has basement parts and pricing. Just unbelievable. And they'll beat my cost by sometimes 10 to 20%. But see, Rock Auto is a trailer up in Utah with a couple of people in it, and they're ordering from huge warehouses throughout the state of Arizona. And then the warehouse calls Uber, and they have them deliver it to me, and I might get it in 24 to 36 hours. I might.
Okay.
And so if you looked up that price, but I'm going to tell you a secret, okay? Most of us know this is going on. So we're scrambling our part numbers. Now your part also has a part and labor warranty on it. Hopefully your shop says if this doesn't go through the 1 year warranty period, you're not going to pay the diagnostic fee to find out that it is bad. You're not going to pay the labor to replace it, and you're not going to pay for the part. The entire operation is free. So the question is would you spend an extra X amount of dollars for that kind of a warranty? That's the
Got
question.
It. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't getting ripped off. Appreciate it.
Okay. Good luck to you. Thank you. And that is a problem. I was talking to a shop owner the other day, and he goes, we're reversing the part number. We're writing it backwards in our size. I said, well, how do you analyze if you bought that alternator more than once a year? Because we all use historical data for that kind of stuff. So when you look at the big picture, pricing on a part is no different than the washing machine. Everything you buy has a markup. And in the food market, because the food goes bad, I'm told that the markup can be 2 times cost, 3 times cost, 4 times cost. But then again, there's a lot of carrots that go bad in the produce aisle. So they have to throw that. So there's all those kinds of things going on. But yes, Mark Salem makes money on your part because I also have to warranty it. And I also have to install it. And you paid for the installation, but yeah, Mark Salem and most everybody else makes money, and puts up, but here's something I do want to tell you. You're not going to believe this, and I don't care, but the average auto repair shop has a 10% net. 10% net. He gets to keep 10 cents out of every dollar. 10 cents out of every dollar. Average. Not the big dogs. I'm including the big dogs and the small dogs. Average. And so at 10%, then he still has to pay 20 to 2 or 3 or 4 cents for taxes. So at the end of the day, he gets to keep 6 cents out of every dollar. Now, he probably is writing off his truck and his wife's car and all that other kind of stuff. And you know how that game's played. But in reality, it's not like I do $1 million worth of business a year and I make $1 million a year. That doesn't happen. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. I know we have a caller on hold. Would you please just stay there and I'll get you right after the break, I promised. And the rest of you, we have 4 open lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Gil, you know when I go 602-508,
you know. I was about to tell you.
I always give my cell phone number. I knew that your hair on the back of your neck was when I paused after the 602. So I'm going to give you the number again. We have 4 open lines, 602-508-0960. Every Saturday I'm here talking about cars, and you're welcome to email me, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you give me your phone number, I am more than happy to call you back, because typically we can sit there and have 10 different back and forths, and I'd just rather talk to you. So a lot of times I call, and I always call from my block cell, and you can imagine that's going to happen. So anyway, right now, if you want to get on, 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Mark Salem here, and we're talking about cars and car repair problems and any kind of issue that you have, but the lines are full right now, so bear with me. I'll let you know as soon as they're open. Blackwell Automotive is the only shop in Northeast Scottsdale area that I can recommend. There's lots of shops there. Some have applied and simply maybe don't have the 5 years experience I need, or maybe there's some other deficiency with the strict rules that I have. But Blackwell's a good guy. He's at 40th Street. I'm sorry. 40th Street and holy mackerel. 40th Street and something. And I don't have it here in front of me. Nevertheless, Blackwell Automotive, he does a great job. 40th Street and Greenway. Thank you very much, Gil. 40th Street and Greenway is a good guy. Okay, let's go to the phones. Harold, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. About 10 years ago, I bought a lightly used Mercury Grand Marquis from a dealer. When I brought the car home and started reading the literature, I was surprised to find that I had purchased a flex-fuel engine. Now, my question to you is, I've driven this car extensively throughout the Southwest, and I can think of only one gas station I stopped at that offered E85. So I guess I have two questions. One is, what do you do to a conventional gasoline engine to make it a flex fuel engine? And two, are flex fuel engines even offered anymore?
Okay, well, this last question is easy. Yes, I don't know of anybody who's using the flex fuel moniker or name tag on their car. I just don't know. This was just a short snapshot of time in my world of car repair. And the flex fuel cars, what it was meant to do, it was a marketing strategy that would allow you to no matter what gasoline pump you pulled up to, whether it was an ethanol pump or a gasoline pump or whatever, it was okay to put into this car. Today we know that it's okay. So you can buy you can go from Los Angeles to New York City and you can buy gas all the way across the board. So what do they do? I think it's more of a marketing strategy, because the computer and the fuel delivery, the spark delivery, and the timing is all based on oxygen sensor and manifold absolute pressure values and mass airflow values, how much air is coming into the car, how much air is going out of the back of the car, and whether there's pinging noise going on or not, what the temperature of the engine is. So the computer's making all of these very quick and sophisticated decisions based on a lot of things. So if you put premium in, the computer will act differently and control fuel and spark delivery much different than if you put regular in. So these were precursors to, hey, we don't care about what gas you put in it right now, because the computer will know by the spark, by the explosion, by the emissions on what fuel you have. So that's kind of how it works.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you. And John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thank you very much for taking my call. Hey, I have a 2009 Lexus 570 SUV.
Okay.
By the way, it's a great car.
Pretty fast, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty fast. It's a wonderful traveling car.
Good.
But here's the problem. I did something real stupid. I decided to upgrade the navigational system. Because, you know, 2009, you know, we're going. The only thing they had was 2013 through the Lexus. Okay. So they put it in, and guess what? It only works half the time.
Yeah.
And I can't get them to fix it. They, you know, they look at it, you know, you got too much stuff in your system. And I said, well, I only have 10 phone numbers. What are you talking about? But that's the answer they give me all the time. And they say, well, it must be your computer system because, you know, it and that's $3,000.
Okay.
So I was wondering, do you know anybody that can go in and check? It's not a disc you put in. You know, it's one that they have to, download and all this kind of. It's a little complicated.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. On one hand, you're talking about that if I was the dealer, do you want your money back and me to take it out, or do you want me to fix it? Which is it you want?
Well, I want them to fix it, but they say they can't. It's really not the program; it's the computer. And I'm thinking, I don't trust the dealership, to be honest with you.
Okay, I'm not going to go into that roadway, but because there are some really good dealers out there, and there's a few of them that make everybody look bad, just like in the independent market. I think what you should do is write a nice letter to customer service at the dealer and just say, it appears I only have two choices, and the first one is I'd rather you fix it, and the second one is you're full of excuses why I can't use this, so I would like very much for you to remove the software or hardware, and I'd like a refund, and I'm happy to take it. If you do business with the dealer, I'm happy to take it as a credit. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, well, I don't do business with them anymore. So.
Okay, well, then forget that part. But just say to them, and then you can file a Better Business Bureau complaint against them. You can, and I think the gist of your story has to be real short. They put it in, it worked for a while, then it doesn't, and they're blaming all this other stuff on it, but they can't fix it. They can't fix it. So they're guessing about what it is, but they don't really know why. Now,
that's exactly it.
Have you taken, I've walked this path before. Have you taken any of the information that maybe came on the box and Google it to see if what happens if there's lots of people out there? I mean, have you asked the internet for some kind of help on this? Because sometimes you'll find something in there that's really bad where this dealer or the manufacturer had said at this particular point we're going to be making prorated refunds. Or you find somebody who says, no, this dealer fixed mine, and his name's Joe, and here's his phone number. So I think you have two choices.
You know what? I've gone on the internet, but the only thing they say is that because this system has to be programmed into the computer, not a disk, you know, there's no answer to it. So I never got the box because it went strictly to the dealership. And I will say this. A friend of mine owns a Toyota shop, and he only works on Toyota, and he said, I did the same thing. It was a huge mistake. They can never fix it. He fixes only Toyotas. And he said, so I will never do that again. And he says, I wish I would have known you before. I would have told you never do it.
Well,
so I don't know if there's another company that does it. Do you know any companies that work on navigational systems?
No, it's a proprietary one. They're going to load it into you. First of all, they have the keys to your computer, so they're going to load it in there. And they're probably the only one that has access to the. But it's a problem that we need a fix for. And somebody needs to go in and flip this switch from a 6 to a 16, and everything is fine. But no, you only have two choices: complain a lot, or suck it up and say, "I'm glad it didn't cost me $6,000." That's what I think.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck to you, John. Byron and Patrick, you stay right there. We're going to come back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're going to go straight to the phones because we've got a full bank of lines and stuff, and then I'm going to tell you about another shop. But Byron, we're going to take you first. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Good morning. I'm very impressed with your honesty and your forthright explanation, so I appreciate that.
Thank
the
you
reason
very
for
much.
The call is I frequently like to listen for the 2-hour program on through my earbuds. Are you on iHeart or Odyssey or one of those apps so I can plug it in?
Gil, that's my engineer. He's the guru at the station because I'm in Tempe right now. I don't know the answer to that, Gil. What do you think?
Well, you can listen to the broadcast after the show on the KKNT960.com website. Listen to weekend shows, and it should be up there 10 minutes after the show today.
Okay. And then also at MarkSalem.com, we have every single show we've ever done in archives.
Wow.
And the difference between me and the station might be I don't do commercials, so it's really an hour and a half for a 2-hour show.
Okay. Understand.
So you can go either one of those.
I'm from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and they have a gentleman who's also very good, but he only lasts about 20 or 30 minutes. And you're very, very, very enjoyable to listen to.
Go. Gosh darn, you made my day. Tell him you're not related to me now.
Not related. What do they call it? A snow turd, snowbird?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, that's me. So thanks very much. I'm going to look forward to looking and finding it. Thanks,
Alrighty.
Sir.
You bet.
Have a great day.
And to you, Susha, sir. Patrick, you're up next, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, man? I love the show. And just had a quick question. I just recently bought this 2013 Expedition from a dealer, and it's like, it was like new pretty much, but you know, under 50,000 miles on it, and it's awesome. But then when I get it up to cruising speed on the highway, it seems like there's a vibration in the wheel as I'm cruising down the road, and so I had my friend look at it. He's kind of like a mechanic, and he's like, the tie rod seem like there's play in it or something. So
okay.
And then I was thinking we have a warranty, like a 3-month warranty on this thing. Is that something that maybe that I can bring it back to the dealer and fix? And how would I go about, like, you know, getting them to fix that?
Okay. First of all, you don't tell them about your friend. Okay. Don't tell them about your friend. What you do is you make an appointment and you say, hey, I just bought this and I'm really happy with it, but I've got this problem that I can duplicate. Keywords there. That I can duplicate. I understand you don't want me in on Monday morning and Friday afternoons because you're busy. But give me an appointment where I can take somebody on a test drive. I promise I won't take them very long. I'm going to show them the problem, and then I'm going to have my wife pick me up at the dealership. That is the home run. But if you go in there and tell them your buddy, who's a quasi-mechanic, says it's the tie rod ends. And let me also say this. I want to ask you, when you have this problem, is it? Do you feel it in the steering wheel, in the seat of your pants, or both?
Well, me, I'm pretty sensitive, so I feel it everywhere. But my wife never even feels it. Like she doesn't. Okay. She does now because I told her about it. But she's the one that's driving the vehicle, and then it's been like almost a month since we bought it. And then
stop. This has to be give and take. This has to be give and take. Okay. So you're saying both in the steering wheel and the seat of your pants. Now, does the steering wheel vibrate like north and south, east and west, or is it
north
sawing?
And south.
Wait a minute. Does it saw left and right?
Actually, I don't even know. It just kind of vibrates.
Okay, well, see, that's the problem, because you have to answer those kinds of questions, because I can diagnose your car right now if you knew the answer to that. So if it's a tie rod end, the steering wheel is going to go left and right, left and right, left and right a little bit. And when you get out of the car and you turn the steering wheel all the way to the right, there's a tie rod end staring you at the face. And now you take the steering wheel and you go back and forth just a little bit, a couple inches left, a couple inches right. And you can actually see the top move and the bottom not move. And you go, poof, and you get the tie rod end. But a tie rod end doesn't usually cause a vibration. It causes a left-right sensation in the steering wheel. So the vibration, if it shakes the whole car, it's usually in the back of the car. If it shakes just the steering wheel, it's usually in the front of the car. And it could be a bad shock absorber. It could be a tire balance. It could be a tire that's it's got a bad tread. There's all those things. But forget all of that. Just say to them, I'd like to take someone for a ride. I promise I won't have them for longer than 10, 15 minutes, because people take our technicians. I had a lady take my technician halfway to Tucson one day. And he called me on his phone and he says, I think I've been kidnapped. So from at this particular point, that's why I'm saying on behalf of all the shop owners, you ain't taking my technician halfway to Tucson because you can't get it to happen. But wait just a minute. It'll happen. It'll happen. No, no, no. You got to be able to make it happen. So I got to run, but thank you very much, Patrick. Good luck to you. Bob, you're up next.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hey, I've got a different kind of a question. I've got a 1972 Plymouth Cuda with a 340 motor in it, and I was driving it yesterday. My destination is about 15 miles away. It was running a little warm, but nothing that I was concerned about. I got to where I needed to go. As I was walking away from the car, I heard it pop, and the upper radiator hose blew off of the thermostat housing. Okay. So, anyways, I let it cool down. I filled it back up after a couple hours with new antifreeze, put the hose back on and the clamp. Trying to get it home, I got about 3 miles away, and it blew off as I was driving.
Okay.
Question is, could it be a stuck thermostat? Or
No. This is time for questions. It's time for questions. When you say it was kind of running hot, where on the gauge? Was it quarter, half, three quarters? Was it flirting with the red, or was it in the red?
No, it was below half.
Below half?
Yes.
Okay. Well, kind of warm. Your CUDA can run between quarter and three-quarter, and I wouldn't have any problem with that whatsoever. But yeah. It does sound like that you have blown a head gasket because unless, of course, the hose wasn't put on right, unless, of course, the clamp wasn't appropriately tightened, I don't know. And then also you could have a radiator cap that is supposed to be a 12-pound cap, and somehow or another it's now a 20-pound cap, which lets the cooling system go into a pressure range it's never seen before. But this is an easy diagnosis. It's really easy. You put the hose back on, you pump it up with some air, you look at the cap, it's a 16-pound cap, you put 18 pounds in the cooling system, you walk away from it, you come back 2 hours later, you start it up, and if it starts running poorly, you shut it off, you pull the spark plugs and find out which cylinder has water in it. That's it. It's easy diagnosis, okay. But if it blew the upper hose off for one of two reasons, you've got internal combustion, you're pushing exhaust and compression into the cooling system, and obviously it's going to blow that hose off, or you didn't do it perfectly. And it's probably more likely because you didn't say some things here that I would listen to. You know, Mark, when I start it up, after it sits for a while, it runs really, really bad, and then it just mysteriously runs better. Well, see, that cylinder is now full of water. And until we get the water out, it's not going to run good. And you didn't say that. So I'm thinking you put a new radiator cap on it, put some 50-50 coolant in it, and tighten up the hose or double clamp it and see what happens. Now, you also run a risk, if you do have a combustion leak, of blowing the radiator to hell. So you have to be careful about this. But for it to get into that hot zone, it's going to be past the three-quarter mark. If the gauge is working, it's going to be past the three-quarter mark.
Okay. All right.
What part of town do you live in? Do you have a shop?
North Peoria.
Okay. Harker's is down there at 38th Avenue Indian School. He's a pretty good guy. He's an old guy. Those of us that have gray hair coming out of the neck of our shirt, you know what I mean? And so if you needed some help, he would be able to help you. Okay?
Great. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Don, you're up. How can I help you, Don?
Mark, how you doing? I've got a 2015 Buick LaCrosse. I've got 67,000 miles on it. And I got an unusual situation, I think. The driver's seat is electric.
Okay.
It's easier for me to get in and out of it if I let the seat go back as far as it'll go. And then when I get in, I pull the seat forward so that I can adjust it to my height.
Okay.
For the last several months, it's been... At different odd times, it'll kick out these little plastic pieces, and it also kicks out a little. It kicks out the ball bearings that I think belong in the bottom of the seat.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what kind of a fix would that be? Is it something that the mechanic could fix, or is it something that the body shop should fix?
Either one. The base of the seat that has the mechanism that allows you to go in two directions, four directions, or six directions, is between the seat and the car. And so you just pop the whole assembly out, you unbolt the seat from it, and you start working on it, or you replace it. So either one, a paint and body shop or a mechanical shop, would be it. Now, do you have, See, here's what I'm thinking out loud, but don't tell anybody. Usually paint and body guys have a little less of a mechanical labor rate than the rest of us. Right now, most everybody in the mechanical rate somewhere between 115 and 145 an hour. Historically, paint and body people have a paint rate, but then on the mechanical side, they're a little less. You might shop that.
Okay. But can these positions, is it a whole new seat, or can these bearings and this plastic rod be replaced?
It depends on the person taking it all out, because most of us old guys would find that is a challenge. and we would put it back together, but the plastic pieces you're talking about is part of the ribbon that makes it go up and down, and I think if the ribbon's bad, they might make a rebuild kit for that. I just don't know.
Okay.
So you could also call the dealer parts and say, hey, do you have a rebuild kit for the seat base on my six-way electric seat? See what they say.
Okay, rebuild kit.
Yeah. For my six-way electric seat or four-way electric seat, whatever you have.
Any idea about cost?
No, I don't. That's something we do two or three times a year, and it's just not on my hard drive. I'm sorry.
Okay, I appreciate the help. I really do.
All right, thank you, Don. All right, we have open lines available, 602-508-0960. Five of them, I think. Gil, right? Five?
You have five, and it's all open.
And they're all open, so we're going to be here for another hour. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And for whatever reason, I just can't find a happy place on my board. So that's why you're going to have to send me the show afterwards, Gil. I think I may have said that, but for some reason or another, my board is crazy. Folks, this is what happened. We lost connectivity with the radio studio in our auto repair shop. I usually push one button, two button, three buttons, and Gil and I talk and we do the show. I can be in the radio studio at our repair shop that's closed on Saturday, by the way, in my underwear. No one's going to care because no one's here but me. Well, something happened and my daughter had some computer people in and they replaced the switch and the hub and the firewall and just upgrade a very archaic system. In the process, we lost the ability to log on or even touch the internet with two pieces of radio equipment. So 2 weeks, we have got everybody we can think of coming in and taking a look at what was wrong, and no one could find it. Meanwhile, I take the equipment to my house and I do shows off the Wi-Fi network at my house, which doesn't please my wife because everybody has to be quiet and the dogs can't bark and all that jazz. So today's my first day back. During this process, the board that puts this radio station to Gil and to the station, everybody's twisted every knob available on this thing. So I am in the process of trying to level out what comes out, the volume of what comes out of my mouth to the volume of what's coming back to me. So it's called local and return. Local is me talking and hearing, and return is Gil talking to me. So it's been a difficult thing, and I'm a car guy, and I'm not a board op. I'm really struggling with trying to get this all. But let me tell you what happened. So finally, I call this guy named Fred, and he works for Fox, and he works in those big sound trucks. And I said, this is what we got going. He goes, ah. I got this kid that works for me. I think he's 8 to 10 years old. He looks that way. His name is so-and-so. And I'm going to have him call you, and he's going to want to come onto your screen, and he's going to want to be able to push some buttons himself. And I said, doesn't make any difference to me. If he's got a magic wand, count me in. Tell him I'll pay him whatever he wants. So Jeremy logs in, and you can see he's talking, and he's talking, but what he's typing is code. And I'm watching the screen, and he's checking this and checking that and looking at this IP address and looking at this IP address. And all of a sudden, he's looking at the firewall and the settings. And he's talking about his kids while he's doing this. And he just keeps going on and on and on. So finally, he goes, oh, there it is. And I go, what do you mean, there it is? And he goes, well, you're looking at the same screen I am. Yeah. See those two little switches up on the right? Yeah. Well, the one should be on. Why? Well, see, Mr. Salem, you have all Windows computers in your building. Yes, sir, we do. They're all Windows-based computers. But you have an Apple PC in your radio studio, and you have a Comrex Matrix, and both of those are other than Windows. So if you open that switch up, then the two pieces of equipment that don't work, which are non-Windows, they will work. Watch, Mr. Salem. And he flipped, and all of a sudden, boom, we're done. So we'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for another hour. And if you'd like to join us, we have three of the five lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me take just a minute to tell you about two car repair shops that are very close to one another and who are the best of friends, which is the very best of our industry, as opposed to two guys that are a mile apart that they hate one another. On one side of the road, on I-17 in Deer Valley, you have Action Auto Repair. I've known Tom since 1983. He does good work. He's honest, dependable. He knows right from wrong, and he makes certain that everybody that works for him understands his version of right and wrong. And there's been many times I've sent someone up to his shop, and I know I'm going to get a nice call back saying they did a great job. That's kind of how it works. The flip side of this coin is we have Kurtz Auto Repair at I-17 in Bell. Been around since 1987. These are gray-haired guys. All of us are gray-haired guys. All of us know what's right and wrong, and we're all pretty good at being able to sift through the minutiae from our technicians. So those two guys are about a mile apart, but in reality, that I-17 corridor is covered. Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, Kurtz Automotive at I-17 in Bell, two wonderful, wonderful shops, but you're not going to get them to play against one another because they're best of friends. So anyway, let's go to the phones, and let's see who we've got holding here, and we've got JR in Georgia. Is that right? Is that right, JR?
Yes,
you're
sir.
In Georgia, the state?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Mark. Hey, it's a interesting thing here. Well, I had an old Nissan. Now I got a new Nissan, a 2014, new to me. And the cup holders, every time you put a drink in the cup holder, when you pull the cup up, of course, the holder comes up too. Is now the cup, of course, fits all the way down to the bottom. I've got one of those collector moisture things, whatever little thing down in the side there. But still, the cup comes up because of the side. Is there some kind of a spray, or how do you resolve that issue of the cup holder coming up? I mean, other than, I guess, maybe glue the cup holder in.
And that's what I was thinking. Now, let me ask you a question. What would work better, a dab of silicone at 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and then you slide it in? But is the back side of the cup holder, is it porous, or is it kind of smooth and hard?
It's a smooth and hard. It's a smooth and hard composition. But I think I just may solve that thing, that just maybe I'll have to permanently put that cup holder in, which I don't really want to do, because then when it does get filled up with something or something spills, you know, you want to clean it up. But if I put it in permanently, then there goes a problem. The silicone, you're talking about going, we just put a line of silicone in those four positions, right?
Yeah, just rub a dab on 12, 6, 3, and 9, and set it down in there, and then put something heavy inside of it or something to let it set. Because I ask you if the outside of the cup holder is hard and smooth, because silicone should just rub right off that.
Oh, yeah, it is hard and smooth. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
And
another
thing you can do, if you wanted to, is you could take a very small sheet metal screw with a very small washer and stick it down in the bottom, a self-tapper, and go with your electric screwdriver.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah.
And lock that down, but it would still let you pull it back up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's I thought out there with everybody drinking tea and everything else, it was kind of a common thing that somebody had a quick fix, you know, in and out, whatever kind of sticky situation with a cup holder. But I will give that a shot there with that silicone. I didn't think about that. So,
and then maybe some two-sided tape at the bottom of it. If the bottom touches the bottom of the cup holder touches the bottom of the hole. Or how about this? How about some Velcro? A small square of Velcro on the very bottom of the cup and the other one on the very bottom of the hole. That way you could kind of unsnap it, clean it up, and snap it back in.
Yeah, I think that is an excellent answer. I didn't even consider that until right now. So thank you for the great answer. I will give you a call back. That doesn't work. Hey, here's a question. If you have a car that's been sitting for more than 6 months and the tires are flat certain or a flat down, like the tires leaked or whatever, mm-hmm. those tires need to get replaced, correct?
And No. I mean, I think the real question is why did they lose all their air?
I don't, you know, maybe dry rot. Is that possibly a situation? It's a 2006 minivan Chrysler.
Okay. Well, I think I would take it to a tire store and just say, hey, you guys, take off one or two of the tires and they lose air. Tell me what's going on. Now, if they say the beads are leaking or if they say that we're starting to bleed air through a sidewall or if this one's got a screw and this one has a dirty bead, there's lots of reasons why that would happen. But if all of them were the same brand and the same size and all that kind of stuff, and if all of them were 10 years and plus older, they should be, if they're 10 years or plus older, you need to get rid of them. They're dangerous. We know that for sure. So, and on the side of it, it says DOT, DOT, and then there's four numbers, and it'll say like 11-06. That means that that tire was made in November of 06. And
okay.
If the tire's more than 10 years old, you do your family a favor and get rid of them.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, okay. All I can say is happy Halloween.
And to you too.
Have a nice evening out there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love Halloween. Thank you very much. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, this is John. I've got a 2010 Maxima. My wife got backed into the other day. I'm looking for a body repair shop out here in Chandler, Tempe.
I don't have one in Chandler and Tempe. The one I would probably send you to would be North Scottsdale or North Phoenix. Phoenix Body Works is North Phoenix. Let me ask you a question. Is the insurance company paying for this?
The other parties is.
Okay. All right. That's a good thing. You want someone to represent you in that transaction because obviously the other insurance company is going to try to, their adjusters are going to try to do it as cheaply as possible, and that may not jive with what another shop wants to do to your car. So I would probably take it to a shop that's capable of being a consumer advocate and knowing the difference between right and wrong. So the answer to your question is we've got Bridwell Automotive, and that's on let me think here, Scottsdale and Lincoln. And you might call him and ask him if there's a body shop around him. North of him is Rain Tree Auto Body. He's going to tell you to go to Rain Tree. So Rain Tree in North Scottsdale or Phoenix Body Works on North I-17. I took my truck from South Tempe to Phoenix Body Works when one of my employees wiped off the rear fender. And I was real happy with the repair. Real happy.
Okay. Did a lot of them go out during the shutdown or change hands?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of movement in the car repair business, whether it's paint and body, whether mechanical, transmissions, tires, wheels, suspension. There's been a lot of movement. You know, Sun Devil was just absorbed by a big conglomerate. And so it was always underneath one family. And I must say to you, a family I so respected. But no one knows now. Because they sold all 20-30 stores. But yes, there's been a lot of movement. I would pay attention. Now, Phoenix Body Works is also replaced, been just recently sold, because as us guys get older, we retire. But here's what I like about Phoenix Body Works. All the big dogs, especially Heather, are still there. And so I like that he kept the staff, because the staff is what makes all of us look good. So,
okay.
All righty. So Rain Tree Auto. Rain Tree Auto Body or Phoenix Body Works. Either one of those two guys can help you.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. You betcha. That's a tough call because the body shops, they're good. And they're every bit as good as mechanical shops. Let me say that up front. The idea is who's the one that's driving the train when your car gets fixed? Mechanical shops, if you don't have an aftermarket warranty company, then the owner of the car is driving the train to get the car fixed. But when you have an aftermarket warranty company, or in the case of an insurance company involving a wreck, you've got somebody else in there. And I think you'll agree with me that typically the insurance company wants to fix it using the least amount of money as possible. And typically the owner wants a little bit more than they deserve. And I think because of that, you can see the dichotomy that we're in when we've got two people pulling on us in the same direction. And to be honest with you, that's a very uncomfortable situation. And most of us shops know how to get out of that real quick. Who's on the line?
Say hello to Dan.
Dan, good morning. How can I help you?
Hello.
Yeah, Dan, you're on the air. How can we help you?
sorry, this is Lee.
Oh, Lee, I'm sorry. Well, I'm all ears. Tell me what you got.
No problem. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of off-the-wall question, but can a leak-down test be performed on a 6.0 Duramax diesel?
Well, the question is what do you're assuming. I'm not going to assume that you know what we use a leak down test for. So I want to know your symptoms before I answer your question.
Okay. Well, my son bought a truck with a bad engine. And he's repaired or rebuilt many engines in the past, and we've always used leak down test on a straight gasoline engine, but can't find anything about a diesel engine to do
okay,
a leak
well,
down.
What is the leak down test? What's the results? There's a leak down test for the cooling system. There's a leak down test for the air conditioning system. There's a leak down test for the cylinders and the valves. So tell me what you're trying to test.
The cylinder leak down test. So it'd be testing the rings or the valves. Yeah.
Why would you do that on a new motor? They're all going to be bad. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not quite sure.
You haven't seated the rings.
No, it's not a new motor. It's got about 130,000 miles on it, but it ate a lifter, and so we're tearing it down. And before we pulled the heads, wanted to do a leak down test to just kind of get an idea of what we're working with.
Okay, you're going in different directions of what I'm used to, but I'm sure that you can rent at AutoZone or O'Reilly's or something like that. Something that will is this a gas motor or a diesel motor?
No, it's a diesel motor. That's
okay.
The difference.
Okay, you're going to have to go through the only hole that's available, and there are adapters for that. And yes, you can crank it over, and then you can do your leak down test. You can add air to the cylinder. You can do whatever you want to do. But there's some of us that have electronics to where we crank it over and we know what the firing order is. And so we look at the electrical consumption from the starter because the starter is going to use more electricity to crank over a fully charged cylinder than it is one that's leaking like crazy. But
right.
Then you have to take it to the shop because that equipment isn't portable. So there's a lot of different things. I don't agree with the process you're using and I wouldn't let my technicians do that. So I'm not going to do a whole lot of work on the front side because when we get inside, we're going to be able to figure out what's going on or what it needs or what it doesn't. So I'm unclear, and perhaps maybe it's a family thing where we've always done a leak down test before we started working. I guess the answer would be is then you're doing a leak test afterwards and you're looking for an enhancement. Well, if you're going to be replacing rings, there will be an enhancement, but I'm not quite sure why you do that. But yes, it can be done. It's a compression test, okay? That's all it is. So just find somebody that will rent you a compression tester for your diesel, and you're home free. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, when it comes to good auto repair shops, I have a good list of guys that I know. And I'm telling you, I don't make any money on your transactions. I'm just telling you that's the number one question I'm asking is, hey, can you guide me to a good shop in Scottsdale or Peoria or whatever? I've got a good list of shops that's on marksalem.com. But Auto Dynamics has been around Sun City for a very long time. And the owner, the Nyday family, I have known since 1968. So if you've been in the business this long, typically you do a good job. Because the guys that don't play fair usually don't last that long. So if you're in if you're actually in Phoenix, and for some reason or another you're looking in Sun City, if you're looking for a good repair shop, the only one in Sun City that I can recommend is Auto Dynamics. They're on Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. That's Auto Dynamics. If you want to give us a call, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And there was a question off the air about the leak down test. the cylinders in a car where the piston goes up and down and the spark, the fuel is delivered inside this chamber, and then the spark plug ignites it, and that causes power that is ultimately transferred to the rear wheels. What we're looking for is we're looking for the engine's ability to create pressure and hold the pressure. So a leak down test is saying we're thinking that we've got a cylinder that's not efficient, and according as we kill the cylinders on a four-cylinder car, we'll kill cylinder number one and we lose 200 RPM. We kill cylinder number two and we lose 210. We kill cylinder number three and we only lose 10 RPM. And then cylinder four is like cylinder one and two. There's a difference. So it's a test that we use to test if the cylinder is participating in the load of the engine as all the rest of them are. And so that's kind of what a leak down test is. Another use of the leak down test is if you blew the head gaskets on your car, after we got done putting a new head gaskets on it, we would fill the cooling system with water, and then we would pump. If we'd look at the radiator cap, and the radiator cap says it holds 12 pounds. Well, we just put new head gaskets on this. We're going to go to 14 pounds. So we're going to put water in it, and then we're going to put 14 pounds of pressure on it, and then we're going to let it sit. And then we're going to crank it over with no spark plugs in it, and there better not be any water coming out of the spark plug hole. And so that's a leak down test in a real simplistic way. What we do is more sophisticated than that. Then as far as electronics are concerned, you know the engine when it cranks over, it goes like this. Like something like that. Well, we can hook on electronics to see, oh, look here. All the cylinders are taking 100 amps of electricity to crank them through the compression stroke, except number seven. So we need to look at number seven because it's not contributing like everything else does. All right, who's on the phone?
Say hello to Dale.
Dale, good morning. Well, how can I help you today?
How do you do? Well, I've got a question. I've got a 2021 Tacoma TRD off-road, and I've just got about 1,500 miles on it, and I've noticed that the gas mileage is better now, and everything's smoother and all that kind of stuff, and I think I should get rid of this break-in oil that they have in there, but they're telling me to change it at 5,000, but I think I'd like to change it over to Mobile One. I just wonder what you thought about that.
Well, first of all, I can promise you that they didn't put cheap oil in that car when they put it in there. I promise you that. There's only four companies in the United States that make oil, and Mobile, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. And everything that comes out of theirs. I can tell you that you can buy whatever oil you want, but if it's a premium oil, they're all the same. Now, you have a filter, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, I'm going to shed a little bit of metal as we polish the inside of the engine for the first 5,000 miles. But see, that's what the oil filter's for. All the oil goes through the oil filter. So I'm not concerned about the little pieces of microscopic pieces of metal from the rings polishing the cylinder wall and the camshaft rubbing on the lifters. I'm not concerned with all of that. Now, what does it call? I bet that thing calls for a 20 weight, right?
You know, I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm pretty sure.
It's either a 10-30 or something like that.
No, 10-30 is a Fred Flintstone oil, buddy. Yeah, Barney Rubble, yeah. Yeah, we're into 0-20s now. And a 0-20 is, I've got a one-ton diesel Dodge with 140,000 miles, and I haul some big, heavy stuff, and that 0-20 serves me perfectly. So they're not going to put a cheap oil in there, I promise you. I agree with them. Let's run it all the way to the regular oil change, and I would follow the recommendations that are in the owner's manual, and I would also follow the weight of the oil. Now, I want to just can I talk to you about an oil lesson for a second? You and I are from the generation that we want peanut butter because we think there's comfort in peanut butter. And we want thick oil in there.
I have hand run and hot rods and stuff like that. I usually use a 10 or a 10-30.
Okay. And here's the deal. It flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and I'm an oil expert, okay? I'm going to tell you that right off the bat. I've been trained by Chevron and Valvoline. So it flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. Today, I had a tough time putting 0.20 in my diesel. But, man, I'm getting 16, 17 miles to gallon out of a one-ton running empty, of course. And I run metallurgical tests on it, and I don't have any growth of aluminum or stainless steel or anything. And my engine runs nice right at the half mark or a little bit past it, which is where I want it to run. So, and I like the idea that I don't have peanut butter in my crankcase. I like the idea that the 20 weight flows like a 20 weight when it's warm. And it's good because the faster we get the oil into the joint, the oil can grab the trash, grab the heat, and get the hell out. Does that make sense? And yep, peanut sure butter doesn't do it. So the old days of 20, 50, and 50 weight in our engines, those are the old days. Now there's, and I'm going to tease everybody now, okay? So I'm laughing. There's a lot of Fords out there that still need peanut butter. I'm just teasing you.
Just because their tolerances aren't right.
So anyway, I think if you're on the same wavelength with me, then just follow the owner's manual and leave that. And they call it a break-in oil. It isn't. It's out of a can. It's just like the stuff I shoot into cars all day long. But it's tough when you get the old gray-haired guy in there and you say, well, your new diesel calls for a 0.20. What? I know. I'm going to write it down as a 2050, but it's really a 0.20. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, I have more time because, you know, I've rebuilt it, motors and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd run them for a while, and then I change the oil almost immediately.
Yeah.
And oil filter. But anymore, they say you don't have to do that. That's kind of freaking me out. But
I promise. You don't have to do that. In the old days, I mean, if we've got two pieces of metal that are rubbing against one another like my hands are right now, okay? As fast as I can, there's heat there. I want to get in there, provide lubrication, and I want to carry the trash away. Would I do better with water or peanut butter? That's the answer.
Yeah, for sure. I know. Yeah, I agree with the lighter weight oil deal.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for your call, and that leaves five lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's five lines open. Gil's going to answer. He's going to say, what's your name? And he's going to put you on hold. Then he's going to tell me in my ear, and I'm going to put you on my piece of paper. And I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 openings still. And if you call in, we can probably break our record of for total amount of callers on the show. It would help us, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. As we go into the final stretch of our auto repair show, 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a shop that I admire. Nate is a real diesel connoisseur. Chevy, Ford, Dodge. He knows them. He knows a lot about the Isuzus and other ones, but Chevy, Ford, and Dodge, he can fix them and he can do it right. So if you've got a diesel with a problem and it's one of those deals where others have tried and couldn't, I promise you this much. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair can find it and fix it. So you can also go to their website 24 hours a day, and they have parts that they sell, hot rod stuff and stuff like that. But when it comes down to just finding a problem, fixing the problem, and eliminating the symptom, they really do a good job. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And let's go to the phones. Tony, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I think I have a couple easy questions for you. I have a old pickup truck that's a pretty truck. You look at it, I don't drive it much.
Okay.
Say 300 to 500 miles. Do I still change the oil every year?
That's a great question. I need a heat cycle every time you drive it if you can do that. Otherwise, bring it all the way up to operating temperature, maybe a little freeway driving, and then park it. The answer to your question, okay, if you're using the conventional oil, the diesel or your car and your engine are not going to have anything bad happen to them when they're sitting. That's it. Nothing happens to them when they're sitting. So the answer to your question is I probably, if it were mine, I'd probably change the oil once a year. I'd use a conventional. Are you using like a 30 weight?
That was my second question. Back when you were able to buy a case of Valvoline or the good oil with a rebate for $10. I have probably 3.5 cases of oil 10W30s, and I was wondering, is there a shelf life on those?
No, absolutely not.
90. Okay.
No, and if you've got 1030 and it's one of the brands that you mentioned, which is Valvoline or whatever, yes, then you can go the whole year, and to be perfectly honest with you, you could go 2 years if you wanted to. All I want you to do, this is what's going to hurt your truck, short trips. I need you to go all the way through a heat cycle, and here's why. Water boils at what?
212.
Okay, we need the engine temperature to go through a heat cycle so we can convert that water to vapor, and then the PCV valve system on your old truck is going to suck that stuff out. I almost said a bad word. Suck that stuff out and send it out the tailpipe. So heat cycle, it's the worst thing you could do for that truck is go to the liquor store for your wife that's two blocks
right,
away and come home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as long as you're exercising it like a horse, then you're home free. And you could go 5,000-6,000 miles on an oil change with a 1030, and I would feel very comfortable with that.
Awesome. Very good. And remember, let's go Brandon, right?
Yes, that's right. That's
okay.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All righty. Joe, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good afternoon. I just heard your show while I was driving, and I just heard the couple segments ago about the oil, and my question is, I have a 2006 Nissan Titan and another older 2008 Tribeca, but my question is, do I follow the oil recommendations like I usually do, or is there something newer I should be doing on that oil?
Well, what weight are you using?
I'll just stick with the truck for now for an example, and it recommends, I think,
1030.
Okay. Based on
mileage. All right, there's three kinds of oil. Conventional oil, which is a long time ago, and it's the cheapest that you can find, but it's a good oil. It's good for 3,000 to 5,000 miles, okay? A semi-synthetic is good from 5,000 to 7,500 miles, and a full synthetic is good from 7,500 to 15,000 miles. Now, I use synthetic in everything I own because I don't like the oil changes. But you still have the responsibility to pull the dipstick every once in a while. You can't just go 15,000 miles without pulling the dipstick. So to answer your question is if you want – a lot of the hot rod guys go, Mark, that's perfect because I do about 3,000 miles a year with my hot rod. Perfect. Change the oil once a year and put conventional in it because conventional is going to provide a window of clean detergents and viscosity enhancers and all that kind of stuff. It's the semi-synthetic is just going to do it for longer, and the synthetic is going to do it for longer yet. Conventional is kind of Fred Flintstone, and Microsoft was kind of the semi-synthetic, and now all of a sudden we've got these computers that do a million miles an hour and answer 4,000 questions in 1 second, and that's what our full synthetics are like. And they're all backward compatible. So if you want to put a semi-synthetic or a synthetic in your 55 Chevy, you can. It's okay. It has all the properties necessary to take care of that 55, whatever it is, 40 years ago. Does that answer your question?
That does. And another question is, if you go synthetic, can you go back to conventional?
Absolutely, because the engine doesn't have it has a brain that controls spark and fuel, but in reality, it has no idea what kind of oil you use. That was a deal a long time ago. I can tell you when it was. It was when Mobil 1 came out with their synthetics. We were counseled by me, a Mobil guy, was counseled that this was a possibility, and we spread that. But in reality today, your engine has no idea what kind of oil you put in it, and it doesn't care. So they're all backward compatible, which means the new synthetics have all the properties that the old oils have. It's just an oil change interval and the quality of the oil, and that's it. I got to run, but thank you very much. Frank, you hang on because you're next when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to 12 Phoenix time, Arizona time, and we're talking about cars. This is about you and your cars. It's not about me. It's not about my shop. It's not about anything like that at all. You see, I've been blessed in ways that I shouldn't have been, and so this is my penance. this show helping you out with your car questions and not thumping my chest and tell you how great we are, which is what everybody else does when they're on the radio and they're a radio talk show host that owns an auto repair shop. I'm not that. First of all, we're blessed with more business than we know what to do with. And number two, there's so many good shops in town. I highlight those shops. Well, Thompson's is a good example. There's only one shop in Mesa that could pass the muster. Some have applied and just couldn't make the grade that I personally have. But Thompson's can't. I've known the Thompson family and the Vivian family since 1968 through 1972 when they had gas stations both in Mesa and Tempe. In high school, I worked for Ken Vivian. So I know that family. So Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street just east of Stapley, and it's Brian and Thelma, which brings those two families together, the Vivian and the Thompsons, and they know what they're doing. And as when you meet them and you shake Brian's hand or talk to Thelma, you'll understand why they're on my list of the best car repair shops. 602-508-0960. We've got open lines available, but I'm going to take Hector right now. Hector, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I just had a silly question. Took a car in. They ended up spending about fun stuff. It never fixed the problem. They said I need a new wire harness, and that would just cost more than the car is even worth. But I was wondering if you just happen to know, what would be the best thing I should do? Junk it? Where could I sell it?
Well, wait a minute. Give me the symptom. What's it doing?
Well, it's got a code, and it's apparently this is what they told me. It had two. Would run really rough. Computer took away one of the codes, but it still ran rough, and they told me that it has a short, but their company of
okay.
Wiring.
Okay, hold on a minute, because you're coming in really broken, but I got the gist of what you said. You've got a code, you got a check engine light, it's running poorly, and the shop, whoever it was, has diagnosed it as being some big major wiring harness problem. Do you know how many times I've heard that in my life? Do you have any idea? And the question then becomes, and forgive me, now you've raised the hackles on the back of my neck. So let me get this straight. You know where it is, but you can't find it. Huh? So you know it's a wiring harness problem, but you can't find it. So I don't understand why, if you know if it's a wiring harness problem, why can't you find it? Now, what kind of car is it? Let's talk about that first.
It's a 2001 Nissan Sentra.
Oh, jeez. It's a big mistake for you to take it into a shop and say, this needs a wiring harness. That's a big mistake. You take it in there and say, I got a trouble code. How much to track it backwards? How much? And come up with so I'm paying for your diagnosis, and then you're going to give me the repair value as well. So what part of town do you live in?
In Santan Valley.
Oh boy. Yeah, you're going to have to come up into the real world up here. If you go to marksalem.com, I know Thompson's can handle this on Main Street in Country Club. And the next one in this area, after I've got to just telling you that it's not about my shop, I'm at Warner and I-10. So, and my last name is Salem, so that's all you need. But yes, this can be found if you want to keep the car. Now let me ask you, is there blue smoke or black smoke?
No smoke. It ran, took it up, and now it doesn't run very good after I've got it back from the shop.
Okay. Is it consuming any water or oil, or what else is there other than it runs poorly?
Nothing.
Okay.
I've kept it up pretty good all these years.
Okay. Well, you don't want to tell the next shop or whatever, you know, anything about the previous one. It's just like how much to diagnose it. Because they're going to come back and they're going to say, I got a problem in this area right here. And sometimes, about 30% of the time, it's you find it and it's a buck to fix it. So that's the best you can hope for. You pay the find, which is the diagnostic process, and then it's a dollar to fix it because this wire should have been connected over here, and it's been cut. So I'm going to fix this wire. Boom, I'm done. We're done. This, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a long way away from anything north of a 7. See, it's just not that tough to figure out if you get that far, but don't be surprised if the next person says, I disagree with the diagnosis. In reality, the problem was over here, and it had to do with this, and I've driven in the lot, and the light hasn't come on, but if it comes back on, from here, this point forward, is on my dime. So you take it. It's running good. You take it. And if this exact same thing comes back, it's on my dime. Many of us have that philosophy. So, all right. Well, good luck to you. Hector, good luck to you. Check engine light. Diagnosis is it needs a wiring harness. To be honest with you, we cut wiring harnesses open all the time. You go to the beginning of the wiring harness, and then you find out that 3 feet away there's another junction box there. So you just jumper a wire from this green wire to that green wire, and you skip 2 feet of wiring harness, and you go, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. So then you just tape that new green wire to the outside of the harness, and you connect it on both ends with weatherproof materials, and you're done. So it's not like we have to take the wire harness out and lay it on a bench and put on our surgical scrubs and cut it and do all that stuff. That's not the way. That's not the way it is. So it's a little easier. Anybody else on the phone?
Yes, we have Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can we help you?
Morning. I have a question about cold airflow intakes.
Okay.
A friend of mine has a Ford diesel, and he's preaching constantly about the improvement in fuel mileage and performance he got with it. I'm curious, is that the same benefit you would receive with a V8 gasoline-powered engine, like a 5.3 GMC?
Okay. Let me just talk about the two extremes. In the old days, we had a 327 or a 302 motor, and we had the air cleaner underneath the hood, and all the air that was aspirated into the engine was hot. We know that cold air carries more fuel. You with me so far?
Yep.
Okay. Now, you have an oxygen sensor in there that's not going to let you use more fuel. And you have a mass airflow sensor that's going to check the temperature of the air coming into the engine as well as the moisture content and all this kind of stuff. So all these parameters want a specific kind of this. So you can change all that you want, but in reality, there are people out there that swear by cold air kits. And really, if you wanted to, you could make your old cold air kits, because you take the snorkel on your air filter and feed it behind the headlights, and you're going to get cold air as opposed to the air in the engine compartment. So most cars you'll see have the air filter snorkel goes up to what we call the core support, which is where the radiator's at. And sometimes it's in the grill there. And so I want to tell you something. I don't sell cold air kits. I have a tough time seeing the value of them, but sometimes people will buy them because they like the air filter or the placement or for other reasons. And in a gasoline engine, cold air carries more fuel, but the oxygen sensor is going to turn down the spigot when it sees a whole bunch of fuel coming out the tailpipe. So it's kind of one of those old wives' tales, I guess.
That's kind of the answer I expected to get.
And I'm going to change your question. Mark, should I put a cold air kit on my truck or my car, or my wife's car or whatever? No. How much is the cold air kit? $139. Oh, just send me the $139. You'll feel better. I'll donate it to the local church or something. You know, I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I'm going to get a lot of flack for that answer. But the fact of the matter is that, let me ask you a question. Do you have brothers?
I have one.
Okay. Those of us that have brothers, there's always one or two in the family that everything he does is just absolutely perfect, and everyone should follow his lead. Most men would never admit to spending hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars on something that was a crapshoot and then turn around and say, damn, that was a stupid thing to do. So it's kind of like, remember the spark plugs with three electrodes? They call them split fires. Well, if the coil's only pushing one zip of electricity, it's not likely it's going to be divided by three at the end of the spark plug. And I've been through all of that.
Yeah, and a water bottle that squirted water vapor into your carburetor.
You know, that was an interesting concept, because when we squirt water vapor in, we're cooling the combustion chamber. And remember, cold air carries more fuel. So there was something, but was it measurable? Hell no. Was it anything that if I took your car and I put that on it and I took it off and put it on, could you tell me by fuel economy or power or performance or just feel, could you tell me when you had it and when you didn't? No. So, back in the day, we made a lot of money selling that kind of stuff, but today we're just a lot smarter and the computers are a lot better.
Yep. Okay, well, thanks. That's kind of what I expected to hear.
Well, don't tell him I said that. Just tell him some guy in Nevada was on the radio and he was asked that question, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you. All righty. It's car repair is tough anyway, but to be honest with you, today's a lot easier than the old days because we have such sophisticated equipment. I've got engine analyzers where we plug it in to the box or whatever. We've got engine analyzers and handheld scanners that, I mean, my very first engine analyzer in 1986 cost more than my house did. My house was $33,000. I spent more for the engine analyzer. And remember, it was called a scope back then? Put it on the scope. Well, this scope had tremendous parameters. The problem is you had to understand that the scope was looking for a number between 60 and 100, and you were at 105. So now what do you do? Well, the answer is what are you chasing? Oh, this is an electrical consumption number. So I'm at 105 and I should be at 100, but yet I've got a failed emissions and I'm running raw gas out of the tailpipe. So one and one doesn't equal two. So those are the kinds of things that we have. The good news is that in the old days we did a lot of by guessing, we did that because we just didn't know the difference. Today, there are guys out there, and many of them work for me and other shops in the valley, and I'm a master technician. I'm not just an owner. I'm a master technician. I've been a master technician since 1991, and a master technician has passed all 8 tests associated with your car. Transmission, cooling system, air conditioning, suspension, alignments, everything imaginable, fuel delivery, everything. I've passed them. And it's a matter of pride because not too many guys can pass all 8 tests. There's a lot of guys that can pass the suspension test or the electric test or something like that, but masters are few and far between. I'm also an expert in the oil field industry, otherwise engine oil. I've been trained by both Chevron and Valvoline about a quart of oil, and I understand it really well and what it's supposed to do and what it's not supposed to do. But the idea is that we do make good money. It's quite different than it was in the gas station days when I worked at a gas station in the late 60s and early 70s. So it's different. I have people working for me on a commission basis that make $100,000 a year, but they're also ASE masters, and they've been around, and they didn't work for me when they were younger. They worked for me when they're older, gray-haired, and skilled. So our industry is in good shape, and we have a lot of equipment. The problem is sometimes we tell you what's wrong with your car, but then we don't fix it. And you need to be suspect of that because is it because we weren't sure, but we need to justify our checkout charge? Because if we knew what it is, why didn't we fix it? Well, maybe you wouldn't let us because you didn't want to spend the money. That's valid. I understand that. So most of the time when there's a dispute and I'm involved on behalf of an insurance company or the government or something like that, it's an even Steven. The shop's wrong half the time. The customer's expectations are out of place the other half of the time, or a variety of reasons like that. But education is important. So we've talked about a lot of subject matter today. And most of you understand from my point of view what's good for you and what's not good for you. I think I object to the fact that we're putting a premium oil in your car and putting a 3,000-mile sticker on there, because the premium oil has anywhere from a 10 to a 15,000-mile oil change interval, and the door sticker or the window sticker calls you back in 3 to 5,000 miles. That's not right, and I see that a lot. I see that a lot. I see that the oil change was a premium oil change for $150. The problem is they got a 3,000-mile call on the sticker. That's a synthetic oil change, but they're calling you back at 3,000. Again, that oil change goes a lot longer than that. See you next Saturday. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem.com.